Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Big Interview Highlights Show, where we look back on all our work over the first year and pick out a theme and clips from our guests to support that theme. Music and football. What else is there in life? No, don't answer that. Your mum might be listening. Like football, music makes the world a happier place, a safer place too. One day it's inevitable that it'll replace Trident. It was also inevitable, essential even, that the Big Interview would touch on music again and again. When we pulled together all the sections from the first season of the Big Interviews, it turned out there was a huge amount of material about music or singing, rock and roll. So much so that we decided to break it up into three sections. This first part is themed around karaoke, the K word. One of my great passions in life, and if it's not in yours, fill that hole. So here we have Chrissy Waddle and Eddie Howe on their karaoke favourites. And Harry Redknapp, without Barney the dog, telling tales of Herman Hreiderson in an Elvis suit. The last time you and I were together, we shared a beer in Kiev.
Yeah.
It was just after the final of 2012. We'd seen Spain-Italy, wonderful game, 4-0. But what was still echoing about in my mind that day was something that I think you share a passion for, because the night before the final, I'd been out with the son of Ozzy, Federico, and Federico and Adam, our cameraman, and I had been to a Queen concert live in the streets of Kiev, and we found this karaoke bar. Karaoke bar where it's a restaurant, you sit down, you have your meal, you get called up, you sing, and if you're doing well, the waitresses will join in with you. And the lads will tell you that if there's anything more passionate about than football, it's karaoke and singing. If we fixed up in Tokyo or back in Kiev, what would be your all-time top three choices of songs to perform if I handed you the microphone and said, you're on?
Well, when I do karaoke, which basically when you've said when you've had a beer, that's when you tend to want to do a karaoke.
Usually.
Yeah, without the beer, I don't ever do a karaoke, to be honest. When I was growing up, I was a big Jam fan.
Yeah.
So I followed the Jam around a lot. So I'd have to put one of their songs in there. Out all the songs, probably I'd have a bash it. It would probably be something like Eating Rifles or Going Underground or Strange Town. We sung classic Jam song. The one I've done probably the most, if I was honest, and people say when you get up to karaoke, you've got to do a song. It's either Mr. Brightside, which I absolutely kill, and... I've got to say the other one I used to do more of was Rebel Yell by Billy Idol. I don't know why I ever picked that song. Billy Idol, I like some of his stuff, don't get me wrong, but I got up one day and sang it and somebody went, that sounded good. And I thought, are they taking the Michael? Or is it? And I thought, right. So I took it on board. So every time I sung a karaoke, they used to say, what are you going to sing? And I used to think, Rebel Yell. And I must kill it as well, but...
That's probably the
three songs. If I had to name the three to get up, that would probably be the three.
You wake up after a Rebel Yell night with a very sore throat the next morning.
You do, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know why I picked that song originally and why I ended up doing it, but I would probably say out of the karaoke I've done all my life, I would say Rebel Yell, probably the most I've done.
I grew up fascinated by the BBC Television Centre and the politics and the backbiting of how Top of the Pops was run. What is Top of the Pops like? The build-up, the bar, the commissionaires, the director was a real Hitler, wasn't he, about, like, stand there, do this, shut up.
Yeah, me and Glenn went on in 87, and it was the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done. And that even talks about the penalty miss, Germany, finals, FA Cups, Champions League final, Marseille. Any type of football I've played can't compare to Top of the Pops. On the day, I missed the dress rehearsal because I was doing an interview somewhere else in London. Then I arrived, I had one rehearsal, and then basically that was it, went on. I remember it really well. I remember Gary Davis was the guy introducing it. He was stood on some scaffolding above her, high up, and the cameras looked at us, then it was zoomed to him, and he went, introducing now at number 11, two guys who are known in the football, or cut it in the music business, who could be the new Wham. We just looked at them as if they think, are you real or what? Anyway, then we did it, and then at the finish, the Sunday papers, that was a Thursday, the Sunday papers had a field day called with a new Spam, everything they wanted. But to us, it was a nerve-wracking, and I always remember I was on Terence Trent Derby, five-star. They were all very complimentary, come up. Junior was on with Kim Wilde at the duet they did. And they were all come up and said, listen, hey, good on you, it sounds all right. And, you know, fair play, it's good, you know, wish you well. We were like, are they taking the mic a lot? Or are they being serious? They were fine, you know. Anyway, the only bloke who basically hammered with, who was on that night, was Smiths Morrissey.
Oh, did he?
He's like, he was like, rubbish, shouldn't be here. He's a footballer.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah, we were like, well, yeah, fair enough. I don't understand where he's coming from. You know, everybody was going, all right, how are you? He was like, so, you know, we were never going to be every cup of tea. I mean, how it all happened, that was just chance of sitting there having a few beers, getting up like a karaoke. It was a group we got up with, Glenn up sang at this presentation, like, and my mate said, oh, it sounded all right, that. I've got a bloke in the music business. Next thing, we're in a house. Next, we're in a studio. Next thing, it's cut.
But it's singing is fantastic. You know? The actual act of singing is makes you happy, doesn't it? Gives you endorphins.
Yeah. Well, I've been in music. Glenn likes his music. I knew Glenn, like, the, you know, big fan of the Eagles and too. I like the Eagles, but they weren't my cup of tea as such. You know, I can listen to the Eagles, I was wrong, but he liked his music, I liked my music. And you know, it was one of them, as it started progressing down the line, I thought, you know what, I'm not bothered if people take the mickey out. I just thought,
exactly.
I love music, and whether it's a flop, whether it's a hit, whether whatever it is, it's a chance when you get older, you look back and think, I could have made a single or whatever it was, we could have done that. And I thought, you know what, it's worth doing. And people still talk about it today, right? It was 1987 that, and people still talk. Wherever I go in the country, someone will shout some question, and 9 times out of 10, the question is, you're not singing Dame Related, are you? 1987, that people still remember that record, which is unbelievable when I look back.
You had another big hit, World in Motion. Mm. But why weren't you in the video? We weren't back.
No, I was in France.
So they wouldn't let you come to film it?
No. What happened with that was I came on France and we're in the hotel at Burnham Beaches, and they came in and they said, we're doing a World Cup song, and everybody went, oh, not another one. That type of thing. And then they said, we're looking for some volunteers. New Order's doing it. So me, Gazza, Peter Beardsley, Steve McManaman, John Barnes, I think it was 5 of us, went, yeah, we'll come. So it wasn't far where they were cutting it. And we got in the car and we drove down to this, it was like a house with a studio in it. And lads with it, he was Keith Allen, the actor, and he was brilliant. He was like there, and he got to go and got a few beers. And all we had to basically shout was England. Barnsley obviously did the rap bit, but all I wanted us for was just to keep going, England. So we thought, yeah, well, it's a day out, get away from the hotel, a few beers. We had a great laugh, great, don't it? To be fair, when you drove away and we went back, we thought nothing of it. We thought, yeah, it was a good day, that. And obviously, listen, depending how the team do, depending how the record did. And because we started going through the tournament, all of a sudden people think quarterfinals, semifinals. The song got played more. People were buying it more. The video, it was basically, was an after event, which what they said was we're going to use footage of England playing. But the actual video of, you know, the jumping around bit, I wasn't there. And all they said was, look, you know, see how it goes. And I always remember when we got back from the World Cup and I went, I had another year in Marseille. And when I came home, about a year later, more whatever, I think it was my first season here. It's Sheffield Wednesday, yeah. And then got a knock on the door and bloke gave us this big parcel and I thought, what's that? He went, I don't know, it's a delivery thing. So I opened it up and it was a gold disc. Because you sing on it, you're entitled to the gold disc. Even though you're only showing England, you got a gold disc. So you thought, I didn't get my diamond lights, but at least I got one eventually for the England song.
That was my dream, to go to Goodison as a kid. Never got there until later in life. But what we would do is follow them when they went to Watford, when they went to the London clubs, when they used to go to Southampton. That was my way of following Portsmouth, etc.
Away end?
Yeah, away end.
Singing?
No, I've never been much of a singer. Even when I go to musical concerts, no, I'll sit and watch, but I don't get vocally involved. Don't know why, but that's just my personality.
There may be a fantastic voice waiting.
I can assure you there's not. I have done karaoke. I can assure you that there's no voice there.
And we're moving into overdrive now. Let's talk karaoke.
isn't it utterly fantastic? Doesn't it leave your troubles behind? And he said, imposing his views to an exceptional human being who's a successful Premier League manager, you're only ever singing for yourself, not the audience.
I can assure you that me and karaoke probably have more in common than you think. I do actually quite like I don't know if I should say this. I do actually like to sing.
I'm obsessed.
I find it.
He's laughing because wherever we go in the world, I've had them after gigs that we've set on with 300 or 400 people coming to us, and we've tramped round European cities for 2 or 3 hours to find an open karaoke bar. I almost stormed out of Euro 2012 covering Spain for UEFA because in Poland karaoke doesn't exist.
Right.
I was appalled because the stress relief, how much better you feel about the world if you sing. It's fantastic. It should be obligatory.
It's a nice feeling, and it's something that I would only do in a very small audience, usually just me. because I can assure you I'm not good. But yeah, I think there's something nice about...
Well, let me do two things to try and back you up here, because I've not deliberately put you in an uncomfortable moment there. Chrissy Waddle, didn't he? Chris told us that. I mean, he's a guy who said, I'm shy. I don't particularly like going out in the town, but he said, I do like a bit of karaoke. And he said that his three staples were The Jam, Strange Town, Billy Idol, Rebel Yell, and to be fair, Chris, I forget the other one. And as an Everton fan, I'll share with you that I sung with, I don't know if Adrian Heath was before, so Inchi and I sung after the European final at Hampden that Espanyol played. And if there's anybody in Everton's history who can sing better than Adrian, I'll be surprised, because he is Frank Sinatra reincarnated.
Well,
when you're singing in your one-man karaoke booth, what would be the choices of songs?
Yeah, I'm not doing my credibility any good here.
It's not about credibility, it's about honesty.
This is going to kill me. now, I will sing Aha, which, if you've heard Morten Harkett sing and you've heard his range, that is not the type of thing, if you can't sing, that you want to follow, but I do my very best. Very different. In fact, I can't get near his range. I can't even begin to try. But it's fun having a go. Now
he's Norwegian. Do Norwegians yodel, or is that the Swiss?
Well, I don't know. He can do most things with his voice. He's got incredible range. But I enjoy that.
Well, let's talk about happier times, because it's about the enjoyment that football can give you, as well as the bitter nights where you can't believe what's going wrong. Tell me why one night you were in a karaoke bar with Herman Ryderson dressed as Elvis Presley.
Oh, and that was cup final. When we got to Wembley with Portsmouth, we stayed in a hotel up in Henley-on-Thames or somewhere around that area. So I took the lads, I booked up an Italian restaurant that had a karaoke. We asked them if they had got a karaoke in for us. And Herman bought his Elvis outfit, and he was fantastic, Elvis. He couldn't sing, but he had all the moves, had all the gear. He had a great outfit as well.
Wait, did he happen to just have it handy, or did he go out
No, he bought it with him. He bought his gear. He has it. He goes out. He lived around here, Herman. He lived up the road here. Really? And often you go into restaurants some nights, and you hear Herman and his wife, they used to sing. And all his friends, they talk about enjoying themselves. They would sing. Every restaurant they went in, they always end up singing. So Herman's got his Elvis outfit with a great big, the white one with all the gold and all the everything, you know, and he got up and done his Elvis. It was brilliant, the lads, we laughed. You never stop laughing.
Music's a part of football culture. Always has been, always will be. Here we've got Jamie Carragher on Johnny Cash and the Anfield Rap, Paul Clement turning down Carlo Ancelotti's Lionel Richie CD, and Michael O'Neill recounting the occasion that Snow Patrol's Gary Lightbody visited the Northern Ireland training camp and helped them to European glory. I want to start with a little bit of trivia. Right, I've got a scratch that I've never itched.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool and Ring of Fire.
Oh, okay.
Why? I really want to know.
I broke my leg in 2003, and so on an away game, I went on a coach with my dad and friends who went on away game for a pub in Kirby called the Fantail. And, you know, they'd go home and away every week, and they passed the time, a tape would go in, and there was fans of Johnny Cash, and they used to sing it on the coach. And then that's where I first heard it. And then it just fired itself coming into the stadium and in the ground on that Champions League run 2005. And I think it may have been Leverkusen away. I think we're the first time it sort of originated And my dad and a few others try and take the credit, I think. He used to go on that coach, the fantail coach from Kirby. But that's the first time I heard it. I didn't know, it was just the lads on the coach liked it, but how it got sort of to be this theme tune that you associate now with 2005, and a song that still gets sung now, especially on away games, or they play it before the game at Anfield, just went from there, Johnny Cash. So I think the credit should go to the lads on that bus from the Kirby.
But you'll never, none of us will ever be able to hear that again without the hair in the back of your neck stand up. It will just transport you back to, I think, maybe you and Stevie with your arms on each other in front of a camera with scars wrapped and the cup's been lifted. It's iconic. It's like a where were you moment when you hear that song. I can't listen to it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that pitch they've got, that's, I think, the iconic pitch of both of us kissing the European Cup, singing along to that. And it's not even the words, it's without the words, just sing along to the tune. And I think we'd have moments like that when something special happens, like Istanbul. There's lots of quirky things that people will remember on the journey. It's not just the games. There's loads of little things. And I think that was part of it. You know, the song, that was part of it. I mean, in the past, clubs have had the FA Cup final, they sing a song, don't they? Or something that gets linked with it. That was, but that was the one and only Johnny Cash.
You've reminded me, I didn't think, but we all go in the cup with Duddy.
Yeah,
we all
exactly.
Do. What impact does music, or the right music, or atmospheric or unifying music, what impact does it have on a mood, a squad, a dressing room? I ask you that because there was a stage in 2008-09 when, for some reason, Pep Guardiola insisted that they played Coldplay, Viva La Vida, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it caught like Ring of Fire, and even the players who didn't like it, it then became not just a superstition, it was something that unified, and then they put it on in Rome. And I don't know how they'd arranged it, and it's booming out over the speakers in Rome, and they've just beaten Manchester United, whatever. And it felt more than just like, oh, there's a song that we all know it. What does the right music do in a dressing room or in a season? Or
Well, the music in a dressing room, I was, even though I was a senior professional, they say they normally sort the music out, but music for me, I never sorted that out. But what I do remember, even as a kid, I was an Everton fan. I can remember the songs I sang as an Everton fan in the mid-80s. I remember then sort of watching Liverpool teams as I was just getting in, and the songs you used to sing, and the songs you'd associate with a certain time, like, you know, the great John Barnes, you think of the Anfield rap, you think of, you know, John Barnes and the World in Motion. As a kid, I still think of the songs. The other day, I think Everton's FA Cup song was Here We Go. But I always remember, at the time, Everton and Liverpool wanted to win the league one year. And the song Everton used to always, hand it over, Liverpool. So you'd be like, so as much as the football, you remember those sort of, I remember football being on the terraces songs rather than being in the dressing room, if I'm being honest. I was never a massive music fan about that band or that artist.
Yeah.
It was more the songs I sort of sang on the terraces.
You see, I know you grew up a Blue, but when you grew up at a distance and I grew up in the 60s, the thing that you taught was that singing from the cot was witty. Mm. A pop song would come, they'd take it, they'd adapt it, or they'd have their own songs, and there was real wit. Now, I don't want to go down the negative route, because one of the things that soured football is what modern kids sing to abuse people. But there used to be football, music, singing and wit used to be absolutely knitted in, particularly in your city.
I think Liverpool fans, especially with the cop, and I think Where You Never Walk Alone come from, I think it was, if I think of them right, in the 50s and 60s, used to basically play the top 10 in the charts, or the top 20 before the game, and I think they maybe picked up on that song. I think that a famous one, I think they sang to, I think Gary Sprake, was it? Careless Hands, was it? To
Leeds keeper. Did he throw one in? Yeah, well, maybe cost him the title. Or?
Yeah, exactly. Things like that. So, I mean, fortunate that the city you're from,
Careless
you have
hands.
That. So that was, I think, a famous one that we heard in the past.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The players had a certain set of music that was played regularly throughout the season, so the CD went on. It was also about enjoying the experience of taking the journey.
That's what I was asking about.
Because on the streets, I mean, it was fantastic and very unique that basically almost the whole of Madrid had, you know, camped themselves in Lisbon for the day. So the mixture of the white shirts with the red and white of Atletico mixing together, the fan zone, and then the approach to the stadium was really quite special.
And getting to the stadium, one of the great things has been like turning that music off. I'll get you. Players' music is usually crap. Was there anything that was any good in that?
No, to be fair, there was quite
any Stone Roses,
nice
any
ones.
Weller.
No.
There's
some good tunes.
I'll take that on trust.
Some Latin music, some of the Spanish songs. The songs were quite.
Did you have one
good
on there? No,
no, there was none of mine. Carlo always tried to get his playlist on, but
what would he put on?
Oh, God.
Sinatra.
Yeah, he had like love songs.
I've been singing a lot.
You can't play these, Carlo.
What, Reunited, Peaches and Herb, or what? That kind of lovey dovey stuff.
Like, he'd have Lionel Richie on the job. You can't play that.
Hello.
The Gary Lightbody one was a good because he's a huge Northern Ireland
Snow Patrol.
Yes,
yeah, let's say for Emery doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
Talented man.
I'm not a huge music fan, but we got him, and he says, "Listen, we have to get him to sing."
Yeah.
We weren't sure whether he would sing on his own. I didn't know whether he could sing acoustically, just or whether, you know, you've obviously seen him with the band. But he came in and he did a wee bit. We put him in the warm up and then he did a bit of crossing and finishing towards the end with the lads. And he doesn't look like a footballer, to be fair. But he made his day.
It was the Northern Ireland manager who said that, not me.
And he was just a really good lad. Just again, so you go, and the reaction of the players to him, he sang for us. The lads were all videoing it on their phones, and I just think it's nice to sort of, he says, "Guys, you have no idea what it will mean if we can qualify." And when people like that say it, it resonates so much more, I think, as well, you know.
Now, I thought I was a bit enthusiastic about music. But you have to search long and hard to find two footballers who love music more than Gaizka Mendieta and Terry Butcher. These two are super serious about their tunes, and they have contrasting tastes. Listen up for Gaizka's tale of meeting Lou Reed, one of the moments in the entire series that made me most jealous. And big Terry Butcher talking about singing on stage with Iron Maiden. He didn't go fantastically at the end in Barra, but you said you were happy to be there. You helped them get to a European final, although you couldn't play in at the end. Was part of the reason of coming to Britain that you already liked our culture, but you liked our music? I mean, I'm not saying you signed for music, that would be stupid. But when you think about, will I go to the Premier League, will I go to Middlesbrough, how's the money, can I get out of Rome, please, was it in the back of your mind that you could start to live a life that had more of the music you loved in it? Or did that only come after 2008?
No, well, it's the reasons coming, that this might sound stupid for some people. When I obviously was in Spain, I used to come to London whenever I get a chance, buy records. I went on holiday Scotland, the Highlands. I did all that drive around and blah, blah.
Of course.
Of course. So it's a country that I always liked, that I always loved.
Yeah.
And the music, obviously, is the big thing for me, but also the character of the people. In those days, you could only watch one game of the Premier League in Spain, Saturday, 3 o'clock. And for as much as I love my siesta, I used to watch them. So I love a lot of things loved about the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew well that I wanted to play in the Premier League. How that would be, how that happened, when, I didn't know. So when the opportunity came along to Middlesbrough, I completely reset and changed my approach to the game and everything. So in a way, it was coming to a place where I always loved, with the music. Yeah, it was important, which I knew I could watch so many concerts. And
we're not kidding, that ability to go and watch live, good music live, the type of music or bands or individuals you like, that's a really big part of your life, isn't it?
It is, because and you know me now, and you know in my whole career, football was very important, but I had always more things, you know, in my life were other things like music, family, friends, and culture and other stuff. So when the football was finished, I had more things to do, my records, my concerts, traveling. Everything was easier for to be there.
I like the word you've used there, because you used the word records, and we're into added time here, nearly into added time. I did a film shoot recently, a couple of years ago, at Arsenal's training ground with Santi Cazorla, who you know is a gem of a guy, Abu Diaby, and Young Jenkinson, fantastic fella, a lovely fella now at West Ham. And to make the, because you've been involved in filming, to make the little video interesting, there was a box of fake records, vinyl, with their faces and nice titles on the front, and they had to look through and they had to say, the Santi Cazorla one is not mine for Abu Diaby. There's Abu, take it out and look at it. And they did it, they acted it beautifully, it looked really good. The graphics on the LPs, it was like faded, kind of swinging London 1960s faded pastel colour shapes and Burt Bacharach squares, and Geisker smiling because he knows exactly what I mean, and most people have no idea what I'm talking about, but he does. And at the end of the shoot, I said to the guys, I said, do you know what these are? None of them had ever seen vinyl before. None of them had ever seen records before. They were like, nope. I think they thought they were, seriously, they thought they were Frisbees. Yeah. The boys haven't lived. Now, you used the word record. You're an in-demand DJ. You take your skill and you use it all around Europe. I don't know if there's any gigs coming up that you want to talk about. You're also a shareholder in Iberica's chain of restaurants, which are in Manchester as well as in London. One. We're in London now when we're talking. There's four or five around London. Yeah. You eat beautifully. Because not everybody does Spanish cuisine well and wine well outside Spain, but they do.
Absolutely.
You do.
Couldn't say it better.
Rather than talk only about your gigs, what's the music you recur to most often? What do you reach for most often? At home, in the car? Who's the band, the man, the girl, the voice, the style that draws you back most often? Because I know that your taste goes right across all music.
Yeah. It's mostly in planes. In planes is where I do my playlists. When I'm at home, obviously Wi-Fi, where I think. That's where I put a lot of songs and save playlists and listen a lot of music when I'm home or in the car or train or traveling. And then on planes is where you have no other choice. That's where I do my playlist. And I like to, at home I listen a lot of stuff and new bands, because more or less, without sounding pretentious, the songs that I play for the old times, I've got them already in CDs or like labeled to whenever I check the vinyls. They're more or less the songs that I normally play. But it's more the new music that so many that I like to be more or less up to date. So that's the music that I do more on playlist and old songs.
Who calls you? Which artist calls
for me,
to you? In which mood as well? Which mood?
Yeah, well, that's what I was about to say. It depends which mood you are. Sometimes you hyper, you get Motown, soul. Sometimes you feel like blues and a bit of a more like moody music. For me, it all started. I'm more of a USA music fan than UK. That's where I started listening to music. The Doors, Lou Reed, Bebe at the Ground. That's why I started. And from there, Sonic Youth. I think all started there. All with Velvet. I think Velvet branches spread wide and very long. And sometimes I listen to new bands and always thinking, well, that's nothing new. There's something that I've already heard. And
usually not as well as Lou did.
Well, no. I think Lou, we spoke earlier about Cruyff, but I think Lou Reed changed the direction of music.
This is just completely nuts. We've never rehearsed this. I wrote an ESPN column. When Lou Reed died, I said, we've lost the Cruyff of music, the guy who risks, who goes against the tide, who scares people, who does things that you haven't imagined. And to me, and I didn't feel stupid and alone, but when you write and you're passionate, you have to take risks.
Of course, yeah.
And I kind of thought to myself, if one person out there gets this, then it was worth writing. And I've got a really good editor. Hi, James, at ESPN, who's a massive music fan. And I love that. I mean, nobody would say Lou Reed was in any way a perfect man.
No.
He had his... but nor am I, you know.
No one else. But he did take those risks and push the boundaries to new things.
And you listen to it today.
Oh, I do listen to it.
And it could have been written, you know, it could have been written. It doesn't sound 40 years old.
Well, not just the music, I think the lyrics. To get bands nowadays that have lyrics like they did back in the days, probably, well, I'm sure, because they had a lot more to say than we do nowadays. I think nowadays, in terms of society, there's not many things we could argue or talk about. In those days, there were strong things going on worldwide. And I think that's why this poetry, that's why they've done books about it. Jim Morrison, not as good as him. But all these things is timeless. You could listen over and over, like you say. Now, in 20 years, it still be nothing. I know that doesn't happen in England because the music culture is massive, it's huge, and everyone or most people know where everything comes from. Like, if you like a band nowadays, you know, it sounds like the Ramones or it sounds like any other. Maybe in other places, they only focus on the new things. Some people don't track back where things come from, and they're having a big miss because they're as good, if not better than the bands now.
Well, I loved what you said when the Velvets, the strands lead you, and that's the path I like going down. When you say, okay, who produced that? What else did they produce? Who co-wrote? And I'm talking because my knowledge isn't as good as yours, and I just follow my passion. But when I found out, I think John Lennon sang in sessions with Bowie, maybe on Young Americans or Golden Years. I think to myself, the guy from the band that probably inspired me most when I was a kid is in that studio doing backing vocals or McCartney and Lennon dropped by to sing backing vocals for Rainbow in the Stones or something. Like, what I would give, you know, if you were given the gift of time travel, you should probably go back and, I don't know, avoid war, invent medicine earlier, and, you know, I'd go to those
sessions, go to concerts,
straight to those sessions and just sit there going, it's pathetic, but I was
lucky to get to meet Lou Reed once.
No.
Yeah, when they played in Valencia one summer, and a friend of mine used to do the website for him in Spain, and he was the president of the Lou Reed fans. So when he came, obviously he invited him. He was very good in that way. So he tell us, well, we were three, come with me after the concert, we might be lucky and get to know him. We were like on the clock waiting in the door.
I'm there.
Yeah, I'm there. So, yeah, come in. We come in. It was like a big terrace between the caravans, tables, and all of a sudden, Louis comes out. Shorts, like a hippie-ish t-shirt, like, you know, nothing was bothering him. Glass of wine. And we start to talk. Music. He's a big fan of all the soul and all that time when he started to work in the music. Sport, he was a big fan of Tai Chi, obviously. What we play? Is you soccer? Oh, soccer, oh, that's too physical. Oh,
really?
He was like, he knew about football, but not a big fan. His musician, which he was based in Barcelona, Fernando Saunders, he was a big fan. His son was a big fan of Barca, so the guy knew a little bit more. But it was a great, like I guess for most of us, when you are with someone that you admire for so many things, and talking like he knew you forever. Like you were friends, you know. Like normally we talk to anyone.
The question that I've got the privilege of asking you, which the world has always wanted to ask, and I think bugs you and asks you everywhere you go, what was your favourite heavy metal concert that you've ever been at?
Good question.
Yeah.
I went to, after the 1990 World Cup, I went to the Playhouse in Edinburgh with Iron Maiden, and well, I met them backstage before, because I know them very well.
Oh, really?
And then watched the concert, and then ended up going on stage and with the roadies and singing a number. Heaven Can Wait, I think it was.
No way.
We went on there. Yeah, it was just the one word of oh. And everybody went oh, oh, oh. And that. So we sang loads of that, and then went off again quickly. And then went back backstage afterwards, and I presented Steve Harris, the bass guitarist, with one of my World Cup shirts from 1990. So I went to the, obviously living in Ipswich now, near Ipswich now, that was where the sort of the basis of heavy metal. I always liked heavy metal before, but Paul Mariner got me onto heavy metal big time.
Ah.
And he introduced me to like Ian Gillan as well.
Ah, yeah, like this. Classic.
We watched a lot of concerts together, me and Maris. And
so Ipswich was a scene where
it all began, really.
Good groups would come and play here.
Yeah, good groups would come. I mean, Hawkwind, I don't class them as a good group, but they came, and Meatloaf, Saxon, Def Leppard, Kiss, all these sort of groups came along. Yeah, they all came along. It's all part of the circuit, of the British circuit. But so they came along, and it was normally packed and really, really good. So I got a good affinity with Iron Maiden. Mark Avery, one of the guys on the management team. Not so much the concert, but I got invited after 1990. I got invited to go to Italy because they were launching one of their albums in Italy, and they were playing a football game because they all love the football.
Yeah,
Steve Harris is an Irons fan, a big West Ham fan. There's two stories to this, because the first one was they asked me to go into Europe to play, so they flew me out and Neil Webb out, because Neil was a heavy metal man as well, and Maris, and we were to play against Alto Bellis and Gentiles and all these people out there.
Yes, please.
In a sort of charity game.
Yeah.
So we ended up going out there and playing the game. And we won 7-1. It was unbelievable. I played against Alto Bellis before in 1985, I think it was, Italy, in Mexico, in a friendly. And it was nice to play against him again. He hadn't put any weight on and things like this. But the best thing in the game was I actually went down the back of an Italian player's Achilles tendon. Now, that may sound a bit brutal, but it was heaven to me because I'd missed that. I hadn't been able to do that for years. So it was by accident, but it felt good, I must say. And this player had to be taken off, which was even better.
I mean, the Iron Maiden boys are there, right?
Oh, yeah, they loved
going
it.
Absolutely mad.
I absolutely loved it, yeah. I thought it was one of the best things I'd ever seen. I just went right down the back of his Achilles and I felt it as well. I was
heavy
like,
metal studs.
Oh, heavy metal studs, yeah. Heavy metal thunder, yeah. So that was the other one. And the one as well, they were launching another album, and they I got the invitation through Mark Avery to fly down to Stansted. And Steve Harris, the bass guitar, lives near Stansted Airport. So flew down there. Maris was there as well, Neil Webb, as usual boys. Steve Harris has got a recording studio in his grounds. He's got a pub in his grounds. And he's also got a football pitch. So we ended up playing the football game in front of all these black leather fans that were Iron Maiden people. I think the dress of the day was black leather. So everybody was like, the long hair, you couldn't tell which were men or women because of the long hair. But anyway, we played the game, and it was a great game of football. And I did something that I was always wanted to do in football, my football career. I've only done it once. And I did it that afternoon. I walked off the pitch into the bar of the pub with my football boots on and downed a pint of lager. I've always wanted to do that. And it was just incredible. We had a great night. So it was. I've got a lot of good memories of Iron Maiden.
How much do you get in life that's completely free, reliable, regular, good for your sex life, and free? Yeah, the big interview. All of these, in their full form, and many more, are available if you search for The Big Interview on Acast, that's A-C-A-S-T, iTunes, or usually wherever you get your podcasts. The Big Interview was the idea of Backpage, and it's produced by them. Thanks to Beer Jacket for the music. Keep up to date with everything that we're doing at grahamhunter.tv, where there's a little box where you fill in your email address. And if you sign up there, you'll get our newsletter, which includes the opportunity to put your questions to our guests. We're on Facebook, search for The Big Interview, and GH Podcast on Twitter, plus Instagram. Keep in touch. Let us know what you think. More soon, baby.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.